Today on the Syneos Health Podcast, we'll be talking about psychology in clinical trials. That's psychology in clinical trials, not the psychology of clinical trials. I'm Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. I'll be joined by Alexandra Wise-Rankovich. Dr. Wise-Rankovich is a clinical psychologist and works in clinical trials here at Syneos Health. There'll be some background noise because we're at a leadership conference. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Psychology in Clinical Trials next on the Syneos Health Podcast. Dr. Wise-Rankovich, welcome to the Syneos Health Podcast.
Thank you.
So that's the question. What does psychology have to do with clinical trials other than we need to get people into clinical trials and so we need to convince them to get in clinical trials? Tell me what it really means.
Well, that's a good question. Just first off, I've been with Syneos Health since 2011 and I've really been very privileged to be able to work in a company that appreciates the value of clinical psychologists in clinical trials. We are actually quite instrumental in the role of executing clinical trials at the investigational site level and within contract research organizations, pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies. And the reason for that is that in psychiatry, unlike other indications, clinical psychologists are the individuals who see the patients, who diagnose the patients, who conduct rating scales, train other staff members on how to conduct rating scales. And so we are very closely and intimately knowledgeable about what the patients experience and what they need in order to be able to be in a clinical trial and for the clinical trial to actually evaluate the correct symptoms and the issues that patients are addressing with the indications.
Do you see the use of clinical psychologists outside of CNS clinical trials, or is it really just a CNS clinical trial determines, therefore, you must have a psychologist?
Clinical psychologist really has a number of roles. Obviously, within clinical trials, you'll see them within the CNS types of clinical trials, but you'll also see them sometimes consulting in areas where there's a crossover of a medical indication that combines with something such as, let's say, anxiety or cognitive dysfunction. As an example, you might see in certain cardiovascular indications, cognitive issues that arise, and you'll see clinical psychologists interact with patients or design and work on clinical trials to help evaluate what's happening in those indications as well.
What have you learned as a clinical psychologist in clinical trials, which is different from what, say, a lay person would know, or even a person that's trained in the sciences or knows pharma but doesn't know clinical psychology? What do you see that we don't see?
What we see is maybe how everything comes together. So we're trained extremely well in the area of clinical care and how to both diagnose and treat individuals who are experiencing psychiatric indications or psychological indications. But when you're in the clinical trial setting and you're a clinical psychologist, I think what you see is the full array of issues that a patient or a caregiver is experiencing, such as the fact that a patient is coming in, let's say, with schizophrenia or depression or anxiety disorder. And in that case, they're really suffering from their own disease state or disorder, but they're also then needing to participate in a clinical trial and meet the demands of a clinical trial. And then from the perspective of the CRO or the biotech or the pharma, it's really being sensitive to the needs of those individuals. For example, in the area of schizophrenia, we are very aware that that patient population is not compliant with a number of things, with their medications, with coming in for their site visits, or completing rating scales on their own. But at the same time, they need treatment. And so for me as a psychologist, it's really rewarding to be able to be there trying to solve the problems and having the insight into what these patients are experiencing so that ultimately they can benefit, even if at times they don't even know they need to benefit from it.
One question I have, and this is as a person that's looked at different clinical trials on the mergers and acquisition side, to worry about how the control arm is doing. One of the things that you worry about and what you're listening for when you're evaluating a company to acquire is whether or not the control arm is doing particularly well. If you hear that, you pretty much know that the trial isn't powered appropriately or probably hasn't been, and things are going to fail. And the place where it comes up most often, where I hear it more than anywhere else, is in CNS. where the control arm has been doing better and better and better, placebo has been doing better and better. A, is this something that you run into, and what do you think is happening, B?
Well, the challenge of placebo performing really well is an extreme challenge for us all. And that, I think, is where the science really comes in. And understanding the population, understanding diagnostic ambiguity in particular, because it is quite easy for the wrong patients to come into trials. So we're lucky at Syneos Health to have the clinical surveillance and training team that actually addresses that directly. But in a clinical trial, you really need to be addressing placebo from the very beginning. And so we're very much engaged with our customers in trying to prevent any issues with placebo coming up that are controllable, meaning that if we can keep that whole effect to a minimum, then what we're really seeing is the true effect of the drug where it exists.
I'm going to ask you a question. It might be an unfair one. What is controllable when you talk about placebo effect?
So you're in a research condition here. We're creating a research condition. And sometimes you have a number of various different controllable confounds, such as a patient walks into their clinic visit. And while it's obviously quite humane and important for us to be interacting in a positive way with our research subjects, it can be taken a little bit further if the site staff are not trained adequately, such as perhaps discussing potential anticipated benefits of a drug when they're not really known, or providing additional care that really isn't part of the research paradigm. And so really training sites, helping them understand that we are in a research situation and that patients, out of fairness to them and to the drug, should be following the protocol. And that when patients are going through a study, to not be talking about what the anticipated effects would be.
Clinical trials are complex, and the patients in CNS may not have insight. So complex and lack of insight, that doesn't seem like a good match. Do you have a proposed solution for very complex clinical trials in CNS?
I do. I've been fortunate to work in clinical trials for 27 years and primarily in psychiatry. And so I've really seen over time our clinical trials become more complex because we're attempting to answer so many questions. And it's a common phenomenon that we see protocols that have everything but the kitchen sink, so to speak, in them. And anywhere from the protocol criteria being quite narrow, or the requirement for our rating scales to be under surveillance, if second and third level evaluations of the same rating that's been done on a patient by external parties, really adding complexity not only for the sites, but also for the patients who come in and spend their days on site following and adhering to the protocol design. Sometimes we have patients that end up spending 6 to 8 hours on site, which is really very highly demanding.
It is.
For their caregivers as well. So what we're really looking for are ways to engage with our customers and find options for reducing burden. But what I'm also hoping for with the number of different types of opportunities that are arising through digital strategies and virtual strategies is to help reduce burden overall. And that's what I see coming in the next 2 years.
Alexandra Wise-Rankovich, Dr. Alexandra Wise-Rankovich, thank you so much for being on the Syneos Health Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for today's episode of the Syneos Health Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher. If you have comments, suggestions, questions, or if you just want to talk through a particular challenge that you're having at your life sciences company, you may email me at podcast@syneoshealth.com. We're consultants. That's what we do.